Hey, Colette, what's going on?
Another day, another dollar. How about yourself?
Well, as always, I am living the dream.
Oh, I know that you are. What's it going to be today?
Well, anything on special, because you know I always like a beer that's a little cheaper than it usually is.
You mean like sass in a glass?
Exactly.
Well, that's on tap, and it's extra sassy.
I'll take one.
Coming right up. Hey, you meeting somebody today?
I am indeed. They should be here now, so hopefully they'll get here soon.
Hold on one second. Let me go take care of this customer at the other end. How you doing today? What can I get you? Who? That guy? That's David. Well, as we all know him, D. Fish. He is an all-purpose business talker. Speaking, writing, yes, podcasts, training. He's always talking to somebody or other. Oh, about beer, music, business. You never know which way it's going to go, but it's always interesting. Hey, why don't I grab your order and you go over there and join them?
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of the Beer, Beats, and Business Podcast. I'm glad that you could join us for another round of interesting conversations with interesting people. Today, I'm talking with Kyle Akerman, who is a double win as a guest. Not only is he an expert at using digital analytics to help businesses get more traffic and conversions, he's also a radio DJ with a weekly radio show for passionate music fans on Chirp Radio. Here's just an idea of what we got into.
So when I come to your website as a visitor, I should know what you do or who you are within 5 seconds. So a lot of people call that like the 5 second test.
And that's just a taste of what we cover. Heck, we even get into talking about Texas beer. My name is David J.P. Fisher, but everyone just calls me D. Fish. Except for my nieces and nephews, who call me Uncle Biff for some reason. I'm a speaker, author, and business coach, and right now, I get to do one of my favorite jobs and be your host on Beer, Beats, and Business. So let's do this. Kyle, how are you, my friend?
D. Fish, good to hear you. It's been a while.
It has been. How's life treating you?
Everything is going well. Was outside today, enjoying the nice weather. Well, I guess when it wasn't raining. But it's beautiful in Chicago, and I love working for myself.
That's it. You got to take advantage of the nice afternoons when you can. That's for sure.
That's right.
So hey, let's dive right in. What the heck is Google Analytics? In your words, inform me and the listener. Teach us.
Okay, without getting too deep into the weeds, Google Analytics, it's an analytics platform that allows you to measure the activity on your website. So if you own a website, Google Analytics will track what's happening on your website, and it'll tell you how people find your website, what content, what pages they view on your website, and then if they take any actions, you know, like, did they download something? Did they fill out a form? You know, did they click on the button that says call me? You know, so it basically just tracks everything that's happening on your website so you can do better marketing.
Interesting. So it really tracks a lot.
Yes. And it can't track everything.
Okay.
But it can track a lot. One of the biggest issues, I guess, is it only tells you what happened on your site. It doesn't tell you why it happened.
Okay.
So that's where you need an analyst or somebody like me to come in and try to, you know, put on your thinking cap and go, okay, I see what happened. Now I got to try to figure out why it happened.
Gotcha. Well, it still is amazing to me. And I wanted to ask you this question because you like know Google Analytics way more than anybody else I know. It's mind-boggling how much, even if it is just the what, how much data there is, right?
Oh, yeah, almost like tons.
Like Google's like Big Brother, like they know everything.
Well, and it's not just them, right? It's all of the big players. So it's Google, it's Amazon, it's Facebook. Heck, you could maybe even lump in LinkedIn. But all these companies have so much data on us now that, you know, privacy's pretty much out the window.
That's interesting. I wasn't going to go this direction with you, but what do you think's happening with digital privacy because of all this? Are we like truly like not? Do we not have privacy anymore? Is there things that we should be doing to keep our privacy?
I'm not really an expert on that side of it, but I just know that, you know, all of our data is out there. And it, but that's the trade-off we have to make for the convenience of the platform.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
You know, if any of us went in there and actually read, you know, Facebook's terms of service, we'd probably find a lot of things in there that we weren't too happy with about the sharing of our data. But we also want to be able to connect with, you know, all of our friends and family and, you know, and use Google to be able to search for everything that we want and be able to buy anything we want on Amazon with one click, you know.
Right.
So that's the trade-off, you know, and as long as people don't use it maliciously, I guess it's not that bad, you know.
Oh, that's okay, because humanity has a long track record of not using technology for malicious intents. There's nothing to worry about.
any invention, whether it's, you know, technology or, you know, whatever it is, can probably be used in both positive and negative ways. So
no, absolutely.
You know, it's just the way of the world. So, but no, back to your question. I don't know. I think we're okay with our privacy. I do little things to try to protect. So the thing I'm worried about is like identity theft.
Okay.
And I don't take a ton of precautions, but I do a few little things. Like I try not to put my birthday anywhere online. Definitely not my social security number, but I don't
care
anybody that ever asked for that. Cause they really only need, I think, about 5 pieces of information on you and then they can be you.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think all they need is like your name, your birthday, social security, probably an address.
Yeah.
And maybe like one other thing. And then they could apply for a credit card in your name or something.
That's crazy.
You know? And so,
but I think you're right that it's interesting because there's always a trade-off, right? A good and a bad. It's, yeah, they have more data, but we get convenience or we get more access to information that we want. But, you know, at the same time, Google knows all the searches that we did, right? You know, it's that back and forth. So how did you get into, you know, not a lot of people, I think, really are interested in the, I actually call it the underbelly of the internet or the back of house of the internet. So how did you get into this?
Well, so I have an engineering background. I worked at Motorola designing hardware for cell phones for like 15 years.
Oh, okay.
Then I switched over to marketing, and it was around the time that everyone was getting laid off, you know, 2009, 2010. And so I immediately went into like digital marketing.
Okay.
That was just an easier thing and you can learn it all on your own. And as I was playing around in that field, I was kind of drawn to the analytics stuff. And I guess that was like the side of my, is that the left side of your brain? I don't know. Whichever side is analytical.
Right.
And I just couldn't get away from it. I was trying to get away from my engineering past, but I'm like, you know, this is actually okay because I don't mind diving into the numbers. I enjoy it, but I like you have to use the creative side of your brain too, because that's what I mentioned earlier. You can, you know, look at the numbers, organize the numbers, but then you got to be creative to figure out why that stuff is happening. And so I kind of like that mix of, you know, the both sides of the brains. And that's what attracted me to marketing. So while I was at Motorola, I went to business school.
Oh, okay.
And I got interested in marketing because there's like the quantitative side and the qualitative side. And I found that really fascinating because engineering is pretty much purely quantitative.
Sure.
You know, you put this input in and you get that output out, you know, like it's pretty well defined, but marketing is not like that. I mean, look at New Coke.
Let's not, right? Well, I mean, that's interesting you say that though, because I think what's happened relatively recently is that this idea that marketing now has both the qualitative and quantitative, because I think if you go back not so far, marketing would definitely be considered much more creative, right? And just advertising and marketing are this, you know, very artistic endeavor, and you wouldn't really think about the numbers. Whereas these days, you really have to have both, right? You for you to be successful, you know, because we can track so much information and, you know, see the ROI of a Facebook ad, right? And see, did people actually click it? How many people looked at it?
Well, and there was, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And there was things that could be measured in the past, but it was on a much smaller scale. So like, you know, like catalog makers and direct market mailers, like that was all analytics. So they were, you know, a subset of
interesting.
of old school marketing that, you know, they looked at every single number, but that was about the only thing. Or maybe if you, what's some other ways you could do it? Like if you had a billboard with a specific phone number.
Right.
That was only on that billboard, you know, so you could, you know, there, so there was some trackability, but yeah, I think in general, it was all about, you know, like the Mad Men type stuff. You know, look at our awesome ad and we won awards for this design and,
right,
you know, all that stuff. But now, yeah, you nailed it. It's, you can still have the great creative elements, but then you can measure how effective it is.
No, that's a great way of putting it. It reminds me back when I was a recruiter. And if we wanted to test out ads in newspapers, we mm-hmm. just used to put different phone numbers.
Yep.
And
yep.
And but then we'd put and ask for different people.
Yeah, that's the part I forgot. Yeah, or like now you see it on the L all the time. You know, it might, you know, I might be writing the Brown line, and it says, "Hey, you know, go to this website and, you know, enter code Brown line."
Right. But right.
So they know which ad you looked at.
Exactly.
So yeah, it was the exact same thing you were doing in the, except with the newspaper, you know.
Yeah. So. It's just, and it said it's so much easier now that we have all of this data. I think it's also really interesting too. You know, both you and I are kind of in the small business space where we're business owners ourselves, as right. You were mentioning, there's a lot of advantages to that on beautiful sunny days in Chicago. But what's really interesting is that because there is this explosion of smaller businesses who now have access to, I mean, when I started Rockstar Consulting 11 years ago, what did it take me to get a website? I don't know. I had a friend who was great at designing it, and I went and bought a domain for $15 and a hosting plan, and like, boom, I had a website, right? So it's really interesting that in a lot of ways, all these small businesses also have a lot more access to marketing right. than maybe they ever did before.
Oh yeah. They've made pretty much every aspect of it simple, but I guess the problem with that is it's also segmented. There are so many different things, so many different tools. So then it becomes like a time and a resource thing. It's like, yeah, you've made it easy for me to do, but now there's all these things I have to do. And if I'm a one person shop, it's like, ugh, like, you know, you can't necessarily do everything.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like right. if you have a website,
right.
What's a good, like, what are some places to get started? Maybe even if you have no Google Analytics yet, or what are some easy ways to, I guess, get started with this besides reaching out to you, right?
Yeah. Well, you mean get started with analytics, or do you mean just to create a good website? Like, what do you mean specifically?
You know what? Both. So I think those are both really valid questions. So let's do both. So what's a good way to get started with Google Analytics? Like, somebody's like, I've got a website. I have no idea though who's coming to it, how they get there, what they're doing when they're there. What's the best way to start?
Yeah. I mean, again, without getting too deep into it, just you need to set up, but we have to have a Google account. Whether most people have Gmail or something.
I think they give them to you now when you get your born. It's like a social security number and a Gmail address.
Yeah. So you can, but you have to create a Google Analytics account, and then they'll give you a snippet of code, and then you can put it on all the pages on your website. And if, say, you have a WordPress site, there's plugins. You can download like a Google Analytics plugin. That makes it super easy. All you do is you give them your account ID that you got after you created the account, and then it'll pull the code in to every one of your pages.
Okay, so, and it just ties it together.
Right. So now you've got the code on your pages. Now you're set to measure a lot of the stuff that you would be interested in as a beginner.
Okay.
And then you need to probably go, you know, you need to find somebody like me or Andy Crestadina or some online resource that can explain just what you should be looking at. Because going right. into analytics to look at the reports is a little intimidating because there's hundreds of reports.
I know. I remember you and I have looked at mine together, and I was like, holy crap, how am I supposed to even know right. where to look?
So when you do start, I try to make it simple for people. Just focus on, you know, where's your traffic coming from? So you can look at your traffic sources. Look at what pages people are looking at, because that'll tell you what they're interested in. And then if there's any kind of conversions, you know, did they fill out the form you wanted them to fill out? You know, did they download your ebook? Did they sign up for your newsletter? You know, those type of things. So just start with those easy things, and then you can build off of that. But that's kind of the most basic things that most people will be interested in.
Gotcha. So then going to the second half of the question, you've obviously seen a lot of websites, you've done a lot of this back end work. You know, what are kind of like two or three places that you find people make a lot of mistakes?
Yeah, I was thinking about this just before I jumped on with you. And so some of these might surprise you. One of them might surprise you. The very first thing I would say is work on your message, your value proposition.
Okay.
So when I come to your website as a visitor, I should know what you do or who you are within 5 seconds. So a lot of people call that like the 5 second test. So because we're all kind of selfish. So I land at your site, I want to know what you do and why I should care.
Okay.
What problem of mine are you going to solve? So make your message very clear. You know, in your case, maybe it's, you know, I help people become better networkers.
Right.
Or something like that. But just, you know, the other thing too, is it reinforces the trail that I've been following. So if I say I looked up, you know, how to do networking in Google, and it took me to your site, and then the first thing I see is, you know, something that says I'm an expert networker and I can teach you. Well, now you kept that trail alive, and I'm like, okay, I'm in the right place.
Right.
So a lot of times, if there's a disconnect between how I got to somebody's site and then what I saw there, you know, you don't want any confusion. So the first thing is make your copy and your main message very clear. You know, what do you do?
Cool.
Another one, and this kind of ties in with that, if you know what you do and what people might be searching for to find you, well, then those are keywords and phrases that are important to your business. So an easy thing from an SEO standpoint is use those important keywords in your page titles.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not going to go deep into SEO because that takes years and hours, you know. But simple things. Google puts a lot of weight on your page titles. And that's in the code. And you can, so say you have WordPress, again, there's a plugin called Yoast, which is an SEO plugin. And it allows you to customize your page titles. So you could take some of these keywords, phrases that are important to your business. And, you know, in this Yoast plugin, you can put it on the page that you want it to be on, and then it would insert it in the page title. And then that tells Google, hey, this particular page on my site is about, you know, networking,
right,
or marketing or accounting or whatever it is you do. So that's kind of an easy thing, you know, because I see a lot of wasted space there. And that's a very, very simple SEO thing that people should start with.
Okay.
And then kind of on the conversion side. So we always talk about, you know, traffic's important and conversions are important. So have a clear call to action on your site. So somebody hits your site, well, you want them to do something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why you made a site. So don't let them try to figure, or don't force them to try to figure out what you want them to do.
Make it easy.
Make it easy. So, you know, like I said, kind of referencing before, you know, if you want them to sign up for your newsletter, we'll have a, you know, make it very clear. Sign up for my newsletter. If you want them to call you, you know, have a click to call button or, you know, something like that. Or, you know, download my ebook.
Right.
Just make it very clear.
Okay.
Because otherwise people, they'll come, they go, oh yeah, this is kind of cool. And then they'll just leave your site without doing anything.
Then they're gone.
And one of the most important things you can do is capture somebody's, you know, like their email address, like a way to reach that person again in the future.
Gotcha. Kind of just be able to start a conversation in some way, shape or form in the future.
Right. I was going to say, so that's three, and I'll just give you a bonus fourth one.
Yeah, do it.
Check and physically pull out your mobile phone, type in your website and see what your site looks like on mobile.
Ah, the joy of mobile.
Because that's what a lot of people, I mean, we all know mobile traffic is becoming a huge part of our activities now. And I get the feeling that nobody ever looks at their own site on mobile, because if they did, they'd see how crappy it is.
I will let you know that davidjpfisher.com is a mobile responsive site.
There you go.
I made sure.
We're going to get just a little bit geeky. Sometimes mobile responsive can cause some things to look wonky, because it's, you know, it's taking your main site, which was probably designed with desktop in mind.
Yep.
And then just like formatting it for the mobile. And sometimes it really screws things up. So it's still worthwhile to just view it and make sure that, you know, everything looks okay. The other big thing too is kind of from a conversion standpoint. Mm-hmm. If you do have any kind of a form on your page, go look at the form on your mobile. And I can almost guarantee you, like, it'll be so small you can't even get your finger clicked to type in the field.
Right.
You know, so you might have to, not you specifically, but, you know, anyone in general might have to fix the form for mobile.
Oh, that's a great point, especially for somebody like me. I actually hate using the web on my phone because I've got these little sausage fingers.
I'm kind of the same way.
And so I'm like, how the heck am I supposed to actually fill this out? This does not work.
Right.
And I think my website looks good on mobile, but thank you for inducing just a little bit of paranoia in me. So I'll have to pull it out after our call here today. No. So, okay. I love that. Those are some pretty simple, but pretty powerful ideas. I like it.
Yeah. I'm trying to keep it simple because, you know, there's so much stuff to worry about. Let's just focus on some big things, you know,
right.
to start with.
Yeah. You can, there's always a rabbit hole to jump down. So
right.
Very cool. Well, we could talk about this stuff for a while, but I want to make sure I leave more than enough time for talking music with you.
Yes.
I'm very excited that we have a legitimate radio DJ on the show today. So here's the question, and I'm gonna let you think about it. What's up, Jesus Lizard? Who? Why? Really? That's the one that everybody should know. Okay, get ready to defend that. But but before you do that, I do have to let everybody know that they are listening in to Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, David JP Fisher, otherwise known as D Fish. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you're digging the show, we'd love if you stop by your favorite podcatcher or iTunes and give us a review and a rating. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Twitter at DFishRockstar. Would love to chat with you. And my host is Kyle Ackerman today. Kyle is a Google Analytics expert, helps a lot of small businesses and other companies make sure that their websites are fully optimized and that they're getting the best traffic, the best conversion. But more importantly, he's also a DJ. So in fact, by the way, Kyle, what's a good way for people to get a hold of you? Just so I don't forget to ask that.
Yeah. So probably the easiest, I'm probably the most active on Twitter. So I'm just at Kyle Ackerman, KyleAkerman. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect with new people anytime. And I DJ for chirpradio.org Wednesday nights, 6 to 8 p.m. in the central time zone.
Cool. So tell me about that. How'd you get into being a radio DJ?
So when I was changing careers from engineering to marketing, and this was probably around 2010, I needed to get some marketing experience. And it was hard to, you know, it was that whole chicken and egg thing. Nobody would hire me to do marketing because I had never done it. And since I had never done, you know. And so I had to kind of go the volunteer route. So I ended up volunteering at Chirp Radio. They're a 501c3. And their entire business is volunteers. So I said, well, maybe I can do marketing for them. And it's a music station. I'm like, oh, this could be kind of fun. So that's kind of how I got involved with the station. And then as I was doing marketing, I decided the best way, or I thought the best way to understand the product and to be a better marketer there is to actually become a DJ, because our product is the radio and the music. So I had zero radio experience.
Okay.
But the organization, they train people to be DJs because they kind of have to, because we're all volunteers. So while they have people that have worked in actual like college radio or, you know, professional radio stations,
sure,
commercial organizations, they, you know, most of us are volunteers and don't have any experience. So I decided to take a leap of faith. They trained me. And then I, after about 2 weeks of completing my training, I took an on-air shift. So each DJ is on just once a week for either a 2 or 3 hour shift.
Okay.
And so I was doing Monday mornings, 6 to 9 a.m.
Drive time. That's good, right?
Yeah. Which might be the one of the worst slots. I tell everyone it is it's the second worst slot. Sunday morning, 6 to 9 a.m. is the worst.
Okay.
Slot.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that.
And then I did that for about a year and a half, and then I took a break, and then I was able to get a better time slot, the one that I'm in now, so Wednesdays, 6 to 8 p.m. I've probably done close to 250 shows now, and...
Oh, wow.
It's a highlight of my week, so I get to, you know, like I said, we're an all-music station, and we focus on a lot of Chicago bands, and... just music that you don't normally hear on commercial radio. So it's for true music fans. I shouldn't say that. That sounds...
Hey, that was pretentious enough for our show, right? I mean, come on.
I guess. No, true is the wrong word. We're not all. A lot of us are music fans, but fans that want to hear stuff beyond what commercial radio gives them.
Yeah, no, that's legit. I get that.
You know, because even your favorite band, you know, so say it's like Led Zeppelin, well, the commercial radio stations are only going to play about 7 of their songs.
Right.
And they probably have, you know, 400 or something that are all good. So
right.
It's like, why do I have to get those 7 or 10 songs? So anyway, that's the kind of stuff we do. Bands and songs that are kind of underrepresented.
That's awesome. That's cool. So, okay. You and I have actually had a number of music conversations, so I know that your tastes run deep and wide, but right. Jesus Lizard? What's up with that?
So first of all, they're not for everyone.
Okay.
I'm not going to make that claim. But they're a Chicago band. I discovered them when I was down at Champaign. At the University of Illinois,
okay.
they played a show on there. This was, 1994, I think. But so they were big in they formed in 1989 and then went through most of the 90s.
Sounds about
they're
right.
I had to look up on Wikipedia, like, what genre they're just, they're kind of like post-punk / noise rock.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to think that too, because that's like my high school and college years, and I remember them being around and hearing some of their songs being like, what is that?
Well, and they were never on see, this is a perfect band. They were never on commercial radio.
No, this is all like college radio stuff.
Yeah, it'd be college radio, maybe MTV, what was it, 120 Minutes or whatever that alternative show
120
was.
Minutes, okay.
Right?
Now you're taking me back. Oh, yeah. Right? I love it.
But their first, this is interesting, their first 4 albums were all recorded by Steve Albini.
Oh, really? I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah. If people aren't familiar, you know, longtime Chicago producer, helped with, you know, Nirvana and a bunch of other bands. And then supposedly when they did sign to, they were on Touch and Go Records for a while, and then they went over to Capitol Records, and supposedly Albini was upset with them going to a major label, because he's always been against major labels.
Yeah, he's a hardcore DIY, keeping it small, keeping it local kind of guy.
Right. So I don't, there was something about their sound, like it's very kind of, I don't like it all the time.
Okay.
But there are times where I like it because it's kind of angry and mean and just, I don't know, if you just want to blow off some steam, like it's just good. And they are amazing live. So one of their lead singer, his name is David Yow.
Okay.
Y-O-W. And he is one of the greatest front men out there. Like he's, you know, I'm not sure who to compare him to. You know, he's kind of like if you mixed like Jim Morrison and Iggy Pop.
All right.
And then maybe, I don't know, and then maybe even a little more aggressive than that combo.
Sure. Okay.
But one of his things is he immediately, when the show is starting, he's already, he's wrapping the mic cord around his hand.
Oh boy! All right, one of those guys. So okay,
you know what I'm talking about, because you've seen a bunch of ska and punk shows.
Yeah, I know what's going to happen.
Usually, within the first 10 seconds, he's out in the crowd, like he's stage diving, and people know it, and they're holding him up. And I've seen him passed all the way to like the back of the Vic Theater, and then all the way back up.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
So he was a showman. Like he was, I love front men that he doesn't play an instrument. He just sings, but he's like a theatrical, he's all over the stage. He's out in the crowd. And so he was a big part of, everybody else is just stationary, but like their bass and their drum parts were just, you know, just driving the music. And yeah, I don't know. I just, something about it, I just like, I like these guys.
I like it. That reminds me, when I was, first really getting into being a professional speaker, I had to retrain myself on how I held a microphone, because when I was in the band, especially when I would rap, you'd usually
turn it around.
Well, no, I'd have it right in front of my mouth. And I'd have to hold it right there. Cause you know, they're usually crappy unidirectional, you know, they're bad mics. And so you put it right in front of your mouth, and you know, I'd actually have my, I'd hold it in my right hand, and with my right pointer finger, I'd rest that on my top lip to make sure I didn't actually, you know, put the microphone into my teeth. and then I realized that when I was like speaking at a professional seminar, I could actually hold the microphone down so people could see my face. It was a total switch.
Well, it's funny. That just made me think of real quick. There's the same issue with cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
People don't understand. And, you know, because I designed these for Motorola, so I know that. People don't understand how sensitive the microphone in your phone is. And people scream into these things, not realizing that they could talk at a normal. And I think what it is, so say like you're on the L. So say you're in a noisy environment. People think that because it's noisy around them, that the person on the other end, that they have to talk louder so the other person can hear them. But that's not true. You can talk at a normal void, normal volume, maybe even a little quieter, and the other person will hear you fine.
I wish people did know that so they wouldn't yell when they're talking on the phone on the L. Yeah,
so little cell phone tip for you.
I like it. I like it. What other music are you getting into right now besides Jesus Lizard? Man. What's kind of been interesting to you lately?
There's so much. I did. I've been. So my girlfriend is a big fan of Wilco.
Okay.
So I've been kind of, I only liked them at kind of a few of their hits, but I've been digging deeper into them and I'm getting a bigger appreciation for them. I also have been revisiting the band Spoon.
Okay.
You know, they're a big,
that's cool.
Like they're playing at Lollapalooza and they're doing an after show at Metro, and I didn't get tickets in time, but they're another band that I've saw back in like the mid 90s a bunch of times, and they're I love what they've done over the years. I'm trying to think of
so it's pretty eclectic. It's pretty eclectic.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So I want to make sure really quickly that we get the third B in here though.
Beer.
Yeah. Beautiful summer night in Chicago. You're out on a patio somewhere, maybe a barbecue. If you had the ideal go-to beer, what would it be?
One of my favorites is Shiner Bock.
Nice.
Are you familiar with that one?
I bartended in a rib joint for a while. So, you know, we had a Shiner Bock on tap for a while.
Ah, nice. Yeah, because for a long time, well, this was probably back in the, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s. There was a lot of beers that didn't distribute in Chicago.
Yep. I mean,
Shiner Bock was one of them.
Yeah, it was hard to find.
But then it, you know, things opened up and I discovered it. I used to, so it's for people that don't know, it's brewed down in, I forget the name of the, I don't know if the name of the town is Shiner, but it's down in Texas.
Down in Texas. Yeah.
In a little town. And it's been brewed for over 100 years, and it's really big at the University of Texas. So I roomed with one of my roommates after college. Went to UT, and he introduced me to it. We would go to Chicago, or we would come downtown and watch University of Texas games at like a UT bar, and the bar owner would literally, I think, have somebody ship, kind of probably illegally, ship him cases of the beer, and he would only serve it during the UT game.
Oh wow, that's
and
cool.
I was like, I really like this beer, and then once it finally got distributed up here, then I could just buy
right.
it. So that's one of my favorites.
That's a good beer. It's the story behind that. I looked into it once. So it's actually like a Bock beer, like a German beer. And the reason it's made down in Texas is there's this small town, Shiner, that's all like German immigrants. Settled it like in the mid, 1800s sometime and started making this beer. So it's actually like a legit Bock beer from the middle of Texas.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's funny. It says, I just looked it up. It says the population of Shiner, Texas is about 2,100 people.
and then probably a bunch of them make beer, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, if it's, it's good business.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and when I was bartending, I said, that's when I got to love Shiner. We also had a Lone Star beer.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. And the tone of your voice is the exact right one. I remember the bottle said the national beer of Texas. I was like, wow, that's just that Texan, swagger / arrogance. But then when you drink it, you're like, oh, apparently Lone Star is Texan for Miller. It was just such weak sauce.
Yeah, it's definitely. And I'm not a, normally I'm kind of, I like pilsners and lagers, kind of lighter fare. But I don't like the, Miller and
water,
Budweiser product. Yeah.
Beer flavored Kool-Aid, as I call it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need a ton of flavor, but I need a little bit, and I don't need a ton of hops and that stuff either. So it's funny because I kind of get left out of a lot of the craft beer revolution because most of them only make, like triple IPAs and double box and all this crazy stuff that. You have one beer and you're hungover for a week.
Right, right.
I don't need that.
Well, that's why you always got to find a good session beer from the craft breweries. The brewers are, I found at least any good brewery, if the guys who are running it and the gals who are running it are smart, they know that they love making those strong beers, but they also know they're like, hey, we're going to be spending all day making beer and probably drinking some. We got to have something that's not going to get us smashed.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So look for session ales. Those are usually the key I found, the way in to a lot of these. Awesome.
Good to know.
There you go. Advice for you and the listener at home. So there you go. We're a PSA focused show. We're here to help. We're here to help. Kyle, we could probably keep talking music and beer for a while longer, but I think this might be a good place for us to wrap up.
Sure.
I ask my guests the same question every time. If you could give someone a tip to make today a little bit better, what would it be?
I would say smile and laugh as much as you can.
I love it. Thanks for joining me today, Kyle.
It's been a pleasure, man. Let's do it again.
As always, thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
Because I used to do, I loved doing, making mixtapes.
Sure.
And, it's all the back and forth with a dual tape deck, and I was, and I would add in, audio bits,
for sure. Movies, like sound clips. Like yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really going to date myself, but, pulling audio from, the VHS tapes.